scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, let's get things going this hour on Flames Talk. It is Friday, June 21st, and we are underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts. Pat Steinberg along with you, and it's time for the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live Standardbred Racing's back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly. It's a Steinberg, Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. And G Francis, I wonder what we're going to talk about today after what happened on Wednesday. Oh, the Jacob Markstrom trade has finally happened. Obviously, that's going to be a big part of our conversation this afternoon. How are we doing, Mr. Francis?
It's been quite a week, hasn't it, Patrick?
It has been, and it's not like we're surprised, right? It's not like we were shocked that Jacob was going to get traded, which he was to New Jersey on Wednesday. It's not that we were shocked that he got dealt to New Jersey. It's just you never know when it's going to happen, and sometimes you just logged onto the Wi-Fi 37,000 feet in the air, right?
Yeah, that was actually bizarre. It's funny how we consume news, but yeah, to finally hear about the news while you're flying in an airplane, and as the story's evolving, developing, different sources are sending me stuff, I'm trying to send them stuff. It's absolutely nuts, but at the end of the day, there's pretty much no escape from the news cycle anymore. If we choose to buy the Wi-Fi on an airplane, you do so at your own peril.
Yeah, exactly. What was your initial reaction when you saw the trade and then we found out what the return was going to be? It's a 2025 first-round pick for the Flames, top 10 protected, and defenseman Kevin Ball. Not to be confused with Kevin Dahl, which I have made that mistake a few times. The Flames, Kevin Ball and Kevin Dahl, now members of the Flames at one time. But what'd you make of the return?
It was predictably underwhelming, and I don't say that to be critical so much as just to point out what I think you and I for sure, and I think a lot of the media, it made it very clear it was a very soft goalie market, and in a world of supply and demand kind of ruling how everything works, there's demand out there for only about three or four teams that are looking to upgrade their goalie significantly, but not all those teams that want to upgrade their goalie significantly have the means to do that. So that means that, I had spoken to some people in the know with all this whole thing last Friday about the situation. And basically it's been pretty well reported that, it was a one-man show. It was New Jersey or bust. And, I think Jacob was open to allowing the Calgary Flames to shop him around at one point because they were such a stalemate, shop him around to a couple of the other cities that were potentially interested or could potentially throw together a reasonable deal for Jacob Markstrom to help gauge market value and then go back to the New Jersey Devils. And I think the whole reason for suggesting the Flames do that is, okay, well, you go and see who else is offering, this, and this. It's going to be comparable to what the Jersey Devils are offering. And, in my eyes, it probably was pretty paltry as well. So, hey, listen, a first-round draft pick is a significant thing. But, it comes at quite a cost. You gave up your franchise goaltender. You're going to pay a third of his salary. And it's a huge win for the New Jersey Devils. There's no doubt about it. It doesn't mean that the Flames are losers. They wanted to create room for Dustin Wolf. I'm kind of rambling here, but what I'm going to say is this. When I heard the news and we knew it was coming, I said, well, it's official. this is no longer a retool, and I've been using that word forever,
yep.
but I will not use the word retool anymore. It is a rebuild, and the Flames can continue to call it a retool, and you know, the semantics are what they will be. But I'm just telling you that now, when you've officially given up your most valuable player in the most important position, the guy who almost single-handedly kept you in the playoff race for the first three quarters of the season, that to me tells me everything you need to know about where this is going. And hey, he wanted out, and the organization wanted to cash in on him before it was going to be too late. And, it's not something that the Flames relish doing. But no. All I'm saying is, let's call it what it is. I mean, do you disagree for 1 second that this is now officially a rebuild?
I mean, yeah, it's probably fair to say. I know that is not the term the Flames love to use, and that has not been a term they've ever been really keen on using. But I guess the only thing that I would say to that, and to play devil's advocate on it, is just that I don't think it changes what the Flames are going to try to do here over the next 3 years. Like, I don't think trading Jacob Markstrom means that Craig Conroy won't go and explore adding in free agency. Whether you agree that he should or not, I don't think it's going to change his plan in that regard, or change his plan in terms of, you know, some of the other trades he might make or some of the other moves he might make here as he tries to. I still think the team is trying to get back to being competitive in 3 years. And I think that's where the Flames argue the semantics too, right? Like, they feel like rebuild means tear it completely to the ground and it's a 5-6 year process. They're trying to do it a little bit more in an expedited fashion to get themselves back to where they are. And so that might be where the semantics come into play, but it definitely takes a shot at them being competitive or as competitive as they'd like to be or that some think they might like to be next year. Because you're right, for three quarters of the season, Jacob was their MVP last year.
And listen, when I say it's a rebuild, I'm not calling it a teardown. Although, you know, they're dangerously close to what you would almost deem a teardown, given that one-third of their entire roster, six veterans who were basically the backbone of this franchise, are all gone. And I think a lot of people, by definition, would call this a teardown. But we know that with guys like Kadri and Huberdeau and Uyghur and Backlund still in the fold, that it's not completely a teardown. And so I'm not going to go as far as to call it a teardown. But I think that would be, you know, I think some Flames personnel who may take offense to the word rebuild, you know, again, it's semantics. But, listen, they're going to go into camp this year saying, we think we can make the playoffs. We want to make the playoffs. That's what they have to say. That's what, you know, that's what every team says going into a season. But the reality is, this team's chances of making the playoffs this year are extremely remote. Like, you think they were remote this year with all the losses they were, you know, incurring as the season went on and what that does to your room. But come on, start a season now with, you know, basically six brand new faces in the place of former star players. And again, it's not a criticism. Everybody in the city has wanted it to kind of start to go this way. It's just the organization doesn't like to fully admit that, yeah, we're going to be going through some hard times. Like, it doesn't sell a whole lot of tickets when they too say that it's a complete rebuild. But I'm just here to tell you the reality is it's a rebuild.
It's one of those scenarios where, like, if you put yourself in Craig Conroy's shoes since taking over as general manager like 13 months ago, it was about 13 months ago he took over as GM, and all of what he's had to contend with since taking on this gig, and it's like, had you asked him 13 months ago, hell, had you asked him in October or November, you know, Craig, do you want to trade Lindholm, Tanev, Hanifin, Markstrom, like, do you want, he would have said, no, that's not what we want to do.
No.
But the circumstances were kind of forced upon him. And on top of that, you know, and this is where I've kind of gone back and forth with a few people on our text line or just, you know, having conversations not on a mic. And I don't know how a general manager in Conroy's position, whether he was on his first year in the job or his 21st year on the job, I don't know how you do things any differently or any better than he has, especially with some of the extra hurdles. It's already a race where you're running from behind, and now you add these extra hurdles that the Hanifin camp threw in. And again, this is not a criticism on Noah Hanifin or his camp or Jacob Markstrom in his camp, but they did not make it easy on Craig Conroy to get the max value or to make the best possible trade. I'll be honest with you. Going into, like, you and I and many others, we all knew Markstrom was going to get dealt, and we all knew that he was going to end up, and we all believed it was going to be Jersey when it was all said and done. I didn't think they were going to get a first-round pick for him. I was really expecting, when we got the news that Jacob Markstrom had been dealt, I was expecting a really paltry return, and I think that they were looking at a really paltry return until, like, Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, when New Jersey finally stepped up and decided they'd give a first-round pick to make sure they got their guy. To your point, and what we had talked about a little bit on Thursday's show as well, part of that because the Markstrom camp, whether it was fully legit or whether it was just to help them get themselves to New Jersey, that they were able to open things up and allow Craig to look at some other spots as well. And finally, a first-round pick got on the table. I wasn't even expecting that because of the difficult nature of the thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think they got there because of the salary retention. I mean, you basically paid for a good chunk of that return by retaining 31% of his salary. So, hey, whatever it takes to get done. Listen, that $2 million that they're going to spend to pay for Markstrom's salary over the next 2 years is really irrelevant to me, because to me, you shouldn't be out there. They shouldn't be spending to the cap this year.
Yeah, they're not a cap team. Agreed.
No. So the $2 million is irrelevant. Like, it's something they budgeted for to spend to the cap, even though they're probably not going to, nor do I think they should. The one thing, when I look at the Markstrom deal now being consummated and they move forward, I mean, we knew that was going to be the story of the summer. You know, the next story of the summer is going to be whether or not it's going to be Tiege Ginla they draft or not. That everyone goes into the draft with only one question on their mind when it comes to the Calgary Flames. And then after that, the question of, days later is going to become, are they really going to go out and spend some money on this roster right now? And I think the answer is yes. I've said this many times. I don't think the answer should be yes. But I could be convinced that if they can get, and talking to Craig the other day about this, it of course has to depend on all the different factors. Term, they're not looking to sign someone for 8 years. That, it's got to be term, it's got to be price, it's got to be fit. There's got to be a genuine desire for that person to come to a situation like the one in Calgary. Like, it will be fascinating to see what they're looking at, but, I think a lot of people are and maybe should be worried that they're going to go out and spend a lot of money to try and make this team a playoff team this year. And I think that's horrifically spent money. I think that every move you make from now on should be done with an eye on making this team a competitive team when that new building opens. And I know that that's a thought shared by a lot of people, but now that you've been forced, none of this, like you said, none of this was Craig's. He didn't want to lose six of the, most popular and best players in the organization, but just the dominoes started to fall, and it was pretty inevitable that this was going to go this way after a while. And now the question is, how do you respond, and how do you do things differently than the organization's done for the last 30 years, which is try to keep one foot in a playoff spot while also trying to keep one foot moving forward in a rebuild. And it's not worked for 30 years for the most part. And I just really hope that the pressure from potentially ownership, or just an implied pressure of being in an organization that always thinks it has to compete every year, I just hope that they overcome that and realize that it's time to continue taking maybe even another step or two back, if that's even possible, and then start to move forward. And I'm not saying a complete teardown, but that's pretty much where you're getting towards right now. I'm just saying, don't spend more good money after bad, because this year's hopes are, and that's not to say the team can't be entertaining. Listen, people in the city of Calgary fell in love with this team last year at times because of the emergence of Connor Zary and Pospisil. And these are exciting, young, dynamic players. We both agreed that Pospisil is probably the most exciting player in the organization right now. And that came out of nowhere. And I would like to see them ensure that there are more kids who get a chance to become the next Pospisil or Zary, as opposed to signing some guy in free agency, spending, you know, overspending, which is what you do on July 1st, and signing a guy to some any sort of term. I think the way to go is, you know, full on with kids. And I think that that can be an exciting brand of hockey too. And it's something you can easily sell for this one moment in time in the organization. It's an easy sell to say, we're going to go with a complete youth movement because that's the best way to go.
So many different ways to take this one. It's the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis, Pat Steinberg along with you on Flames Talk on this Friday. You know, there's the idea of now what the tandem looks like, which we'll get to in just a second. But, you know, this was and you can understand why. If you're Jacob Markstrom, and we don't know how close things got before the trade deadline. There's differing opinions and differing information out there, who you talk to, who I've talked to, who others have spoken to about, you know, how close something got before the deadline for Markstrom. But regardless of how close it was, we knew New Jersey was all over that, and we knew New Jersey was interested. And since February or January or March or whenever, it's been pretty clear that New Jersey is the most likely candidate, that New Jersey is the spot that Jacob would like to end up being, and for good reason, right? Like, this is a huge pickup for the Devils, a team that is rife with elite young talent that is looking to take a step, but was absolutely sewered by the third worst goaltending in the NHL last season. You know, they have NHL average goaltending, middle of the road goaltending. They're a playoff team, no questions asked. So you get why, if you're Jacob Markstrom, you're looking to win a Stanley Cup, you are dialed on winning, and that's the most important thing for you. And here's this ready-made fit in New Jersey. If I'm him, of course the Devils are one of the top, if not the only spot I want to go to when I look at the market and the climate out there.
Totally get it. You know, there's talk that the two teams that the Calgary Flames have had reached out to as kind of, we'll call them placebo offers, whatever you want to call them, you know, Toronto and Ottawa. Well, who wants to go to Ottawa? Like, you know, that's a non-starter for a guy like Markstrom for a lot of different reasons, in my opinion. But then, you know, Toronto, oh, wow. Well, like, that's a hell of a good team. And with a goaltender, you could argue that they could have easily gotten over the hump this year and won another round, you know, won a round. And, you know, it's forever been a dangerous team, but just missing that defensive / goaltending element. And so, you know, I could see them considering that. But really, you think they're trying to figure out how they're going to keep their core four, let alone adding a $6 million goalie. Now, again, the Flames could have made it easier by making him a $4 million goalie. That could have maybe helped. But I just don't know how it, you know, how able Toronto would have been to come up with a significant offer. So, yeah, I totally understand why he wants to go to Jersey. I think it's a hell of a team. I think when they made that trade on Wednesday, I think they instantly become, with the combination of a new coach to inject some new life and some new, you know, some new approaches and a goaltender, who's been the source of great frustration for all the players in the dressing room and in the whole organization, I think they instantly become, you know, a top 7 or 8 contender for the Cup next year. That's the way I see them. I think they're that good.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that they would, you know, want to finally get this across the finish line.
And they did. And it finally, what are we going to talk about now? Like, how do we do this hour if we don't have Jacob Markstrom? It's been kind of the top story since before the trade deadline. And yeah, it receded a little bit after the deadline when the Flames had the final quarter of the season to play out. And, you know, Jacob definitely had his comments about how he didn't like how it was handled, so on and so forth. But it kind of receded to the background and then it's picked up here over the last couple of weeks. But this really has been, as you mentioned, there have been, and I wrote this on my column over at sportsnet.ca on Friday. I kind of transcribed and made a story out of the chat that Ryan Huska had with us on Flames Talk last week. And the main part of the story is him going to visit Jonathan Huberdeau earlier this month. But the first line was, hey, the most pressing issues for Flames fans have not been Jonathan Huberdeau's future or fixing the power play or anything like that. It's been Jacob Markstrom and where he's going, and are they going to get Tiege Ginla? What are they doing at the 2024 NHL draft? Those have been the two dominant storylines, and now one of them has been figured out. So that really is a massive piece of business done for the Flames.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know what, like, I don't think the Flames love being, you know, When I spoke to Conroy last week, and he said, you know, I wrote a column on him saying, look, Markstrom has not demanded a trade. Like, he's not, there's no ultimatum here, but we, you know, he stopped short of saying, but he actually does want to leave. You know, he's not going to say that, but we all knew it. This has been hanging over this organization since the trade deadline. And they got a brief respite from it because after the trade deadline, there's nothing you can do about it. But once the season ended, we knew this was going to be the biggest story. Now that's behind us. Up comes the tease again, the question. We see how that's approached or if it's even a possibility for the Calgary Flames moving forward. You know, I had a really interesting chat with Jerome. I'm sure we'll get into in a bit here about his feelings on Tease going to the Calgary Flames potentially or wherever he may go. And then, of course, like I said, free agency, right? That is going to be fascinating too, because that'll say a lot about, you know, where this organization, they could say that it's not a rebuild. They could say whatever they want. They can deem this whatever, however they want, but their actions will really dictate how they feel about this team moving forward and how they think it's best to approach it. You know, Duclair is a name that we've been hearing this for what, a year now, that potentially they're going to try and make a run at Duclair because he was the guy who played alongside Huberdeau when he was in Florida and they had some good chemistry together. You know, I'm just that one, I guess, makes some sense in a lot of people's eyes, but it all depends on term. It all depends on price tag. And, but outside of that, I'd like to see more kids coming to camp. I'd love for Craig to go into camp saying, we're going to leave a couple spots open for kids to grab some spots. We don't know who it's going to be, but we're going to give everybody a long look at you. And that, I think that would be enough for fans.
And we'll get back to free agency in a second. I guess the last thing that is important on the goaltending front is what it now means for the Flames with Jacob no longer here. As of right now, Dan Vladar, who Craig Conroy told you in your one-on-one that you had with him earlier this week on Sportsnet.ca, told you that Dan Vladar was doing squats before he left and before everybody parted ways. So things were really trending well. And then told us on Wednesday when he joined us that they're expecting him to be ready for the end of August. He'll be good to go for camp. So sounds like Vladar is very much on track for the recovery timeline they set out for him when they shut him down in March. And Dustin Wolf, who is now looking at a whole lot more playing time for next year. So we're looking at a Wolf and Vladar tandem as it stands right now. Should that be the way they go into the season in your eyes?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, God help us. Nobody could sit here and hope. I'm okay with them signing a goaltender in free agency who they think can, you know, be the number three guy in the organization or number four guy. You know, that's fine. You're continually developing guys and moving them up, and you gotta have, you know, a guy waiting or two. But I don't want them to go out there and try to grab some retread veteran goaltender out there. Like, let these young guys look. We know Vladar can play in the National Hockey League. We saw some encouraging signs, certainly for Dustin Wolf. Let these guys go with a 1A, 1B tandem all year long, and with based on merit. Like, I've always thought that that's how, unless you've got a superstar goalie, I've always loved, hey, you go on a run, win two, three, four games in a row, it's your net until it's not anymore. So I would love to see, hey, whoever plays the best gets to play the most. Now, of course, there, even if he doesn't play the best, you still want to give Wolf quite a significant workload. And when I say that, I guess I'm saying, like, man, I think you'd be thrilled if you could get him 40 games this year. I don't know how you see it, but to me, if it's a split right down the middle with whoever's the better goaltender emerging with more starts than the other guy, that's the perfect scenario for me. Listen, those guys have 82 NHL starts combined to their credit. Like, it's just another reason why I say that no one should be expecting this team to make the playoffs anytime soon. And I'm not saying that I don't believe that these guys, you know, have a lot of upside to them, because I think both of them do. I've thought that Vladar, since he got to Calgary, would one day be a starter in the National Hockey League. I still think he's capable of it, but he needs to go out and prove it now. So I like having those two guys be the guys, but the expectations can't be all that high. They can be high that they're progressing, but not that they're getting the job
right.
done.
And I'm with you. I think that especially now the deal's been made, you have a little bit more time to think about it. You take a look at the free agent market. I think with the fact, especially now that we know that Vladar is very much on track with his recovery, and, you know, you talk to a lot of goalie experts, Eric, they believe that this hip surgery is going to be significant for Vladar and will take his level a whole lot closer to what we saw in his first year with the Flames. So, you know, goaltending experts believe that Dan Vladar's got a great chance of being a higher level goaltender this year than maybe what we've seen from him the last little bit because he's gotten this hip problem taken care of. And obviously you want more time for Wolf. So I like the idea of them doing it, but I do think they need to kind of find that quad A guy. That's the baseball term for a guy who's really good in AAA, but maybe isn't a full-time major leaguer. And that's kind of the type of goalie. Chris Drieger is a name that comes to mind, who's, you know, played most of last year in the American League, but is still a guy that can jump into the NHL and get the job done. Devin Cooley's a guy that I think the Flames might have interest in if he gets to the unrestricted free agent market. And Eric Comrie. Those are just three names that are all free agents that would, I think, be nice additions to the organization. They'd be your AHL one. And then if somebody falters, if Dustin proves that, you know what, the NHL, he's just over his head. I don't think that's going to happen, but, you know, Dustin's like, he really is struggling here. He needs some time in the American League to get his game back, but we need somebody to come up and give us NHL games. Or if somebody gets hurt or whatever the case may be, if a trade pops up and somebody wants Vladar, like there's so many different things that could happen. Having that guy that you're comfortable with and in both the American League and getting NHL games, that to me is the need that they'll have to fill in the free agent market.
Yeah, and I'm not going to disagree. They do need that guy. I like the name Drieger for sure. I'm not a fan of Cooley's, but I, you know, we could go through various lists, and obviously a guy like Kevin Woodley would be a far smarter guy to talk to about this than I have, and I heard your interview with him just the other day. So, you know, obviously there are lots of options out there. Let me throw one kind of back at you. If you're Craig Conroy, are you not considering the possibility of trying to re-up Dan Vladar at this point in time? Or is it very much a, hey, let's wait and see how this season goes before we make any decisions on anybody? Because, you know, if he goes out and starts 40 games this year and is really, really, really good, it's going to cost you a whole lot more money if you're going to re-up him in the middle of the season. Or do you go to him now and say, look, I think he's making, what, 2.2 right now?
Yeah.
You know, go to him and say, look, how about we give you another 2 years at 2.5? I don't know enough about the goalie market and how much he would say, no, I'm not signing for that. I think I'm worth four somewhere. I don't know, but would you consider approaching Vladar now and seeing if you could add another year or two to his deal?
I think I'd wait because okay. I'd also want to see, I'd want to see what happens this season, and I'd want to see what type of trade options might exist for me closer to the deadline as the season goes along as well. Because one thing that I do think is also interesting is the idea of having a more veteran guy to have with Dustin Wolf at some point down the road. I don't know if it makes sense right now because you've got Vladar under contract and there's some potential there, but what if he has himself a nice season and Dustin also is having a nice season? Do you think about maybe trading a guy like Vladar in season and then re-upping next summer, next year's free agency, and bringing in that veteran to, you know, be able to play 35 games with Wolf and also provide that guy to, you know, help bring him along, whatever the case may be. So I don't think I'd be doing it quite yet. I'd be waiting to see how this year goes for Dan and keep all my options open there.
Yeah, fair enough. Because really, I mean, we know that the organization, the focus is Dustin Wolf, and you want to see how he evolves, right? And if he looks like he's, if he continues his success from the AHL level at the NHL level, which is going to be tough given, you know, how many new faces are in the lineup and all that. But if he can, then you don't really want to be spending too much money on the backup. I like the way you explained that there. It's a good one. I still think that if you're Craig Conroy, you talk to Vladar and say, hey, just kind of wondering, could talk to his agent and say, what would you think if, about a 1 or 2 year extension, what would that look like? And just see what their request would be, what their demands would be. But it's probably best to just sit on it and just see how these guys go this year. We're all, I think again, you know, the expectations will be extremely low for this team this year. That's fine. But people will be very excited to see how things evolve. So there's still intrigue in a hockey mad market like Calgary. No, it's not as easy to sell tickets this year potentially, but it's also easy to kind of point to the positives that people should be looking for as they move forward, because that could be, you know, fun too, just to see how these guys evolve. The stories of the year, like I said, or those youngsters this year. Well, the story of the year was the decimation of the roster for sure, but you know, the positive story was certainly youngsters.
Yep.
Getting a chance in a market where youngsters have rarely been given much of a chance.
Well, and now the focus shifts to the newest youngsters in the organization as the 2024 NHL draft, as you and I speak right now, is exactly 1 week away. That's where we'll turn our focus as we continue along in this edition of the Eric Francis Hour on Flames Talk. Eric Francis and the Eric Francis Hour brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live standardbred racing is back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, as we continue along on this Friday, it's the Eric Francis Hour. Steinberg and Eric Francis of Sportsnet.ca on Flames Talk. And the first half of this hour, good chunk of this first of this hour, rather, dedicated to this week's Jacob Markstrom trade, as you'd expect. But now, that was one of the kind of two pressing issues this summer for the Flames. And now, we turn our focus on 1 week's time. The NHL draft, the 2024 NHL draft, and what, you know, whether it's, Eric, whether it's Tija Ginla or whoever the Flames select at number 9, what they do with number 28, do they move up? I mean, whatever happens with eight picks in the first four rounds, six picks in the first three rounds, you know, this is one of the most important days that Craig Conroy, or important weekends that Craig Conroy's had since being on the job. And so everybody's buzzing about Tija Ginla, as you'd expect, but it's just the overall idea of making this draft count for the next 10, 15 years of the organization. There's no doubt this is looming large over the organization.
Yeah, this is a big one. And, you know, it's probably unfair that all the focus going in is whether or not they're going to draft Tease again. Like, cause you're right. There's so many bigger things at play here, and whether they get Tease or not is part of that. But that's the sexiest talking point for everyone for obvious reasons. I mean, Jerome Ginla is the greatest Flame of all time and one of the most beloved, and the you know, having the stars align for a bit of a rebuild at the same time as his son, highly touted son, is really starting to come into his own. Like, it's just too good to be true in a lot of people's eyes. And that's why a lot of people are like, no, it's not going to happen. He'll go before the Flames pick 9th overall. But I don't know, man. I look at all these different mock drafts and draft boards, and there are just as many of those mock drafts and draft boards who say Tija Ginla will go after 9 as there are say he'll go before 9. So I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine. I had a really interesting chat with Jerome Ginla about it, and he said the number one thing he gets asked when he's just walking around, either at a rink or around Kelowna, where's he's going to get drafted? Like, as if he has a clue where he's going to get drafted.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody's wondering, and they're even asking the dad every time they get a chance.
What did you go into? Because it's funny. It got posted just a few hours before the Markstrom trade got broke, and all of a sudden, you know, everybody was buzzing about Jacob Markstrom on Wednesday. But on Wednesday morning, early Wednesday morning, you're one-on-one with Jerome Ginla, and first comments from Jerome on the idea of the Flames selecting Tiege in the first round this year. Give us some of your takeaways from chatting with Jerome and your one-on-one that's available at sportsnet.ca.
Yeah, I thought it was fascinating. I was talking to him for 40 minutes, and Jerome doesn't do a lot of media, as you know, even though I've known him since he was 18 years of age, covered every game he ever played. Like, you know, he still, you know, he just likes to keep to himself. He's got a lot on his plate. The number one question to me was, because there were a lot of people who said, you know what, I don't think Jerome would want his son to be subjected to the pressures and the spotlight that would come with him going to Calgary. And I asked him flat out, would you be okay if your son was a Calgary Flame? And he said, absolutely. Like, he loved his time in Calgary, loves the city, loves the fan base. Loves so much about it. He said he'd be totally on board if his son got drafted by the Flames. But he also said, we'd be happy if he got drafted anywhere. Like, his job as a parent, he sees as no matter what, where you get drafted, you immediately focus your attention on the positives of that situation. And he cited his example when he got drafted by Dallas. And he was in the stands with his mom and dad and grandparents, and it was in Edmonton. And said, you know, one of the best days of his life. And he was really excited about going to a team that only had three junior kids go to camp the next year because it was a real established team. But then as soon as he got traded to the Flames, he focused on all the merits of going to a team where there were going to be spots open and he was going to have a chance to make the roster. So, you know, that stuck out to me, that he's big. He'd be okay with him coming to Calgary. And he said, in terms of pressure, he said, there's always pressure. There's not going to be more pressure just because he goes to Calgary. I mean, I always cite the example. You think there's going to be less pressure if he goes to the Montreal Canadiens, you know, or stays in Canada and goes to the Ottawa Senators? Like, he's an Iginla. And in terms of the focal point being on him, he said, like, Tease really excels and loves the pressure, wants to be that difference maker, is a real competitor, and said, look, both my sons and probably their daughter as well, because the name on their back, their whole lives, especially when they moved to Canada, they've been hearing chirps every shift of their life about, oh, you're just on the team because your dad's the coach, yeah, or whatever the case may be. So he goes, both my sons, they both got some pretty thick skin, and it just continues to get thicker. And when you get to the NHL, it's got to get even thicker after that. So, you know, those are all some of the things that really stuck out with my chat with him. But I think the big thing is, like, a lot of people want to know, is he the same type of player as Jerome? Because let's be honest, a lot of people haven't seen Tease play a single shift. And he said, look, Tease scores a lot more with his shot than I scored at his age. Like, in junior, when he was a star with Kamloops, he got most of his goals, he said, on rebounds in front of the net, just in traffic. But the other thing I thought was really interesting, and I've never heard him kind of say this before, but Jerome had said, listen, it was a different era. Like, he said, up until I got to junior, I won pretty much every kind of most sportsman-like player, Lady Bing Award that there was to win. He said, one year I went with two penalty minutes. And he said, and I'm pretty sure I can tell you, Eric, that when I got my very first penalty in hockey, I was crying in the box. Because he hated sitting in the box, watching the game go on and him not have a chance to be out there scoring goals, getting points, and helping his team win. But when he got to Kamloops with Don Hay started working immediately on turning him into a power forward. And back then in 93, that meant you had to show that you were competitive by one way, and that was fighting. He said, so we looked at guys like Adam Deadmarsh and Shane Doan, and we all knew pretty much anyone who wanted to go drafted in the first round as a power forward had to get 100 penalty minutes. And I never thought of it like that, but he said, even guys who weren't tough and weren't fighters, you'd see them get into scrums late in games on purpose, like games where it was 8-1 and they'd want to get a 10 or 20 minute, you know, 10 minute mix of conducts all over the place to bolster their penalty minutes. And that's not something you see anymore. Like, no. Guys don't know, you know. So that was one thing that he focused on as a player, as a junior player. And he said, look, my son didn't have to worry about that. That's a whole different thing. There's different ways to show that you're competitive and it doesn't involve fighting.
I like that. That's actually a really good story. It tells you how the game has changed since Jerome was breaking in the early 90s. And now here we are in the early 2020s, 30 years later. That's actually really, really good insight. By the way, that one-on-one, easy to find, sportsnet.ca, question and answer with Jerome Iginla, the advisor to Craig Conroy and Eric Francis at sportsnet.ca right now. Do you think, what's your gut say? Does Tease Iginla end up the property of the Calgary Flames next weekend?
Oh, man. You know, I'm going to say he does. You know, obviously the odds are stacked tremendously against it because there's so many prospects out there that could go in that ninth spot for sure and could go in the 5, 6, 7, 8 spot for sure. But I don't know. I just feel like the stars are aligning, and it's maybe it's more of a hope, just because I think I don't cheer for any teams or anything. I just hope for good stories, and that's just an amazing story. And my gut tells me it's going to happen. Now, I know that the odds are that Montreal is the team I think will probably snap them up beforehand, or Utah or Ottawa, but I don't know. I'm just kind of going out on a limb and suggesting that I actually think this actually could happen. You know, one of the things about it, I think, is that other teams that draft ahead of the Flames are all going to try and hold the Flames ransom, right? They'll pick up the phone and say, hey, we're just about to take TJ Ginla. What's it worth to you? And I think the Flames have to go in with a mindset, like, unless they're hell-bent on getting him, just saying, okay, well, if you're going to take him, you take him. We got another guy. We got a pretty good list here. So that's one thing that's interesting. The one thing I threw at Jerome, think about this. Can you imagine, Pat, and I know you saw the story, but, like, can you imagine if when it was the Flames' turn to pick and Tej was available and suddenly Jerome stood up with a jersey in his hand and walked to the podium with Conroy. Conroy introduces Ginla, and the whole place is abuzz, knowing exactly what's just about to happen. A guy, I don't know if it's ever happened before in draft history. I doubt it has, where a guy has stood at the podium and drafted his son. Like, how incredible a moment would that be for a Hall of Famer to welcome his son to the league that way? But Jerome said, yeah, that's not going to happen. Like, he just poured cold water. I'm like, oh, come on, man. It would be great TV. He said, no. Like, my memories of sitting in the stands with my family the day I got drafted, like, it's one of the great moments of your career.
That's fair. I forgot about that part.
Exactly, right? And I didn't think about that either. And he goes, look, I'm going to be up in the stands with my son, my daughter, my other son, my wife, and we're just going to really enjoy the moment. Wherever he goes, however this goes down, I want to be there to stand up and hug my son. I mean, that's going to be a beautiful moment in itself, no doubt about it. We don't need to do that at the podium. We can do that in the stands. So he, I did think it was a really cool idea, but he shot it down pretty quickly. And to his credit, he also said, look, I also think, Eric, that would be misrepresentative, because if the pick is to be made by the Flames, it will not be me or anyone like me making that decision. This will be Connie and the scouting staff making the decision. He says, Eric, I've had every opportunity to click on any report I've wanted to all year long from all our scouts on my son. And he said, it's been very tempting, but I have not clicked. He said he clicked on one early on and he felt awful about it, and he never did it again the rest of the year. Whenever they talk about Tej in a meeting, he leaves the room. He wants everyone to feel free to talk about his son any way they legitimately feel about him and not be tainted by the dad standing there staring him down, one of the toughest guys to play the league. So I think they've done it right in terms of the process. And I think that people should believe that even if the Calgary Flames decide to forego Tej at 9 and he goes at 11 or 12, I think there's going to be a massive uproar. And I'm not sure it's fair, because all the people that are furiously, I think I would be critical too, because I just think it's a moment in time, an opportunity that you can't pass up. So I think I'll be killer. I'm going to be critical too, but I remember, you know, most people have never seen Tej play. And so, you know, you got to put a little more faith in the scouting staff than to just rip into them and say, this was a terrible idea. But whoever they pick 9th overall, if it's not Tej Ginla, the first question that's going to be asked to Craig Conroy on the draft floor at the end of it is, why didn't you take Tej?
Yep.
And it's not fair, but it's a legit question. So I'm pretty sure they're aware of that. I've told Craig that that's going to be the biggest storyline, whether they get him or not. He knows it, and he understands it. But I guess people should have a lot of faith in, you know, that the scouting staff will get this right.
Well, and it's one of those things that it feels like, and mock drafts in the NHL feel a little bit less, you know, on the nose than maybe a mock draft in the NFL does, but it feels like Montreal is the team to watch, because we know who's going 1, and then we've got a pretty good idea who that mix is going to be 2 to 4. If we're expecting Montreal to take a forward, and if Montreal doesn't take Tej, then all of a sudden it's going to be all eyes on the next 3 picks, 6, 7, and 8, and whether or not one of the other teams ahead of Calgary, but between them and the Habs, take them. And I know for sure that me and Vix, when we're on the draft floor doing the show on Friday night, if Montreal does it, when Montreal goes up there, we're going to say, okay, this is the one. Like, are they going to take Tej Ginla? And the minute that they do or don't, obviously if they do, it means that the Flames won't be getting him or won't be selecting him, that there's your Sherlock Holmes moment of the day. And if they don't take him, well, then we're just going to be watching, and I think every Flames fan is going to be watching intently those next three picks. And then if they don't take him, the Twitter is going to explode if they decide to. And you know what? If you're Craig Conroy and Todd Button and the rest of that scouting and management staff, you can't worry about that. But that is also just the fact of the matter, that Twitter is going to explode.
I talked to someone in the management team about a month left in the season. I said, look, if you guys don't draft Tease again and decide to go with someone else, you better get it right. And he countered by saying, yeah, but if we draft Tease again, that better be right too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And only time will tell what the right pick will be. And it could be years before we really can determine legitimately what the right guy was. And usually it's some guy who goes in the fourth round anyway that would have been the right pick. But when you look back 10 years later, but it'll be so dripping in drama. Listen, as I would say that, would you think it's a fair statement to say that? As if you're a Flames fan and you've watched the draft for the last, say, I don't know, for the bulk of the last 15 years, there's really not been a whole lot to get excited about. Like, yes, the Tkachuk pick was, you know, they're picking relatively high and there was the chance they would get him, but it was a long shot. Blah, blah, blah. I think this one is the one that people will be watching. Like, people who haven't watched the draft in 10 years will probably tune in to watch this one just to see, you know, if that one scenario that we're talking about unfolds. And, you know, what do you think? I mean, I know the odds are stacked against him coming to the Flames.
Well, I'm like you. I'm just like, it's too good a story. So I'm putting it for selfish reasons, for being there and for the hubbub and getting the opportunity. You know, Hanlon will probably bring us Jerome to talk about it. And like just for and Tiege and all of the excitement of being there for one of the biggest moments in years in the organization and all. I'm like, I'm trying to put it out in the atmosphere and out into the world as much as possible. I'm manifesting it to happen. The only thing I will not be critical of is if he goes early. And I'm never going to be critical of a team not moving up to get said player. I think that is silly criticism because it's too expensive to move up. If they had to move up to number 5 to take Tiege Ginla, I think it's going to be too expensive to make that make sense.
Yep.
I'll be a little more critical if they pass on him at 9 and he's still there. Then I'll be like, okay, you kind of you open yourself up to this. But if they don't move up, I'm not going to be critical on that front. That's for sure.
100% agree with that. And as we've said a million times on this discussion, the easiest thing for the organization is if Montreal or somebody picks them beforehand, and then it's a moot point. Then the question isn't. I mean, I guess someone still might ask, hey, you know, was the price tag too high to move up and try to grab Tiege? And I'm sure Craig would be like, look, we got a great player at 9. Like, let's talk about him. I wouldn't be critical at all. Listen, Craig Button, I just saw his trade board or whatever. He's got Tiege again at number 3 now.
Wow.
You know, the ascension up the ranks has been unbelievable. And, you know, Jerome has spoken to his son a lot about the ups and downs of, like, central scouting. At one point, Jerome said he was touted at Central Scouting in the midterm reports to be a third rounder amongst North American skaters, which means about a fifth rounder. And then by the end of the season, he had this tremendous surge, just like his son, and he went 11th overall. And now here Tiege is going almost, in a very similar spot. It's just, it's such a good storyline. And even if we never get to write it again, we've been having a whole lot of fun painting that picture beforehand. We'll see you on Friday.
Yep. Well, be well, my friend. Great stuff as always, Eric. We'll do it again next week, and it'll be draft day when we do it next week. And I'm looking forward to what draft day brings for the Calgary Flames. It's going to be a fun next week when it comes to news. And we know that Jacob Markstrom won't be getting traded at the draft because he's already been traded. So that part we know for sure.
Exactly. Amen. That's one last thing for Flames fans to worry about moving
exactly.
forward.
Get out of here, man. Great stuff as always.
Enjoy your weekend, my man. We'll look forward to next week.
There you go. That's the Eric Francis Hour for this week as we start to wrap things up this hour. Eric Francis on Twitter at Eric Francis. He joins us every Friday for 1 hour here on Flames Talk, Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts, and of course live right here on Sportsnet 960, The Fan. Now the Eric Francis Hour as we start to wrap things up, brought to you as always by our friends at Horse Racing Alberta Live. Standardbred racing is back Fridays at 2:15 and Saturdays at 12:45 at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly.